Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
I've never really understood that twinkle in their eye that they get.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Hey, Nick, what are we talking about today?
Fiona, today we are going to have a spoiler-heavy conversation about Avengers. It's been a couple weeks. If you haven't seen it by now, or if you're still waiting to see it, just don't listen to the spoilers. But we're going to talk about what happens in that movie. We're talking about Top End Wedding, which will lead into an interview that you did with both Miranda Tapsell and Gwilym Lee. And of course, what we've been watching. But first, Avengers Endgame.
God, seems like 1,000 years ago. I fought my way out of that cave, became Iron Man. Realized I loved you. I know I said no more surprises, but I was really hoping to pull off one last one.
The world has changed. None of us can go back. All we can do is our best. And sometimes the best that we can do is to start over.
Right, well, we've come to the end of the Marvel superhero this phase.
Yeah, that's how they're selling it. We're not finished.
It's kind of a culmination of what started in 2008 with the first Iron Man, and they've tied up lots of loose ends.
Well, there are 21 films that have led to this film, Avengers Endgame.
Right. They've been dropping little teasers about the overarching story. It's similar to a comic book series, whereas lots of different comic book titles all blend into one and one storyline and end with a big finish.
To rule them all.
That's right. And that's what's happened here. You saw this movie.
Correct.
What did you,
I saw you
like
at
it?
The movie.
That's right.
What did I think?
Yeah, did you like it?
I think so. I thought I was satisfied with it. That's different, I suppose. But I think I'm on the record as saying these aren't my must-see, go-to movies. I'm in the business of talking about films. So, of course, these are a lot of the films that get made these days.
Can I ask you another quick question before you go on?
I was on
a
tear.
Do you evaluate these as movies or as superhero movies?
No, movies.
Like, do you think whether it succeeds as a film on its own or as part of this big Marvel machine? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but why would they be different?
Because I think there's a lot of fan service. There's a lot of just different factors that don't matter to people who are evaluating it as a movie, like as a proper movie. Like this, it could be kind of a mess if you're just thinking of it as it's just a movie.
Yeah, but it's not an either or to me. Like it's a movie that's also a superhero movie. And of course, there's the beats of the way these films are told, and there's the okay, now we're going to do a bit of backstory, and then here's two guys going to punch each other, and here's girls going to punch each other.
All right, so sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's fine. No, it's a good conversation because I do think the way fandom works now, people do carve them out as a separate thing. Like, here's your movies, and here's the real movies. Or you know, like, I don't see it that way. There's other kind of fan service movies that other people would treat like it's their superhero movies. So I don't.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't buy into that argument, I guess. Do you?
Okay.
Do you?
Well, I tend to notice it a lot, and I tend to, and we can talk about it, but I forgive a whole bunch of stuff if they do some of that comic book stuff that pokes my nostalgia buttons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think something like Thor Ragnarok is a much more interesting movie, and I would evaluate that more based on whether it's a good movie rather than how does it do in the whole superhero genre?
Mm.
So I weigh them all kind of differently.
Yeah. I'm not sitting there, notebook at the ready, finger on my chin. Like, I like a big, dumb movie.
Yeah.
And I do think this worked in that there was a lot of character arcs to cover.
Yeah.
There was a lot. There's a lot of referencing other films. Full disclosure, I haven't seen all the other ones. I've seen most of them.
Yeah.
And even the ones I haven't seen, I think they served that well and I got enough out of those moments to understand. Obviously, people get more out of them if they're more connected to those characters and films. So I think it worked that way, like as a quote-unquote movie in terms of telling a story and telling it efficiently, albeit within 3 hours. And as a big dumb superhero movie for me, you know, I had a good time. In truth, I haven't thought about it a lot since. Okay. It worked. And I did write about this on Twitter, but it was talking of fan service, the whole Marvel thing of having an end credit scene.
Yeah, total ripoff.
Oh. Why?
Because there is none.
Yeah, but you were you the guy that shouted out? Because I wrote about there was
bullshit.
Yeah,
somebody
there was a guy
yelling
bullshit.
Yeah.
And,
I wanted to, but somebody
why?
Beat me.
Because I fully expected
I felt like
there
a
not
jerk
to be
to
one.
Sitting there. They've treated us like jerks, making us sit there through the whole credits, which
no
are interminable. The culture did. Society did.
You were free to leave.
And then all we got at the end was that noise, which I guess was the noise from the first Iron Man movie. And people were kind of geeking out about that, which is, I guess is something. But
my point was, and you've proved it, I guess, you know, with these films, you are led to expect to wait through the credits. There's usually, well, Guardians of the Galaxy had about 5 or 6 extra scenes throughout the credits. I don't think it's a bad thing to sit and watch credits to see who made this film you've just sat through. Mind you, that there is so much visual effects work in these films that the credits do go on a very long time.
That's true.
But
it's worth respecting. There's a lot of hardworking people.
It's true. I didn't expect there to be one because they're building this as the end. So why would you have another thing to?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So not to put myself out as a smarty party, but I still waited just to make sure.
Yeah, just in case.
Confirm my suspicions. Anyway, and there was someone who was very displeased about the lack of a end credit scene and started swearing and being a bit of a dick. So.
Yeah, I heard that also. I was disappointed in that. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really well done. I thought there were a whole bunch of problems I had a bunch of misgivings. But I think I really liked Infinity War, and I think that this did a good job of continuing that, wrapping it all up. I appreciated a lot of the emotion they tried to jam in there, and I wasn't in tears or anything, but I really appreciated that they wanted to make this a big emotional journey come to a close with Captain America and Iron Man.
It really was their film, wasn't it?
Well, it ended up to me feeling like it was Robert Downey Jr.'s franchise because I forget where he was in 2008, what he was doing, if this reignited his career. I think it did.
Very much so.
But I feel like it's all of these movies have his sensibility, his fast-talking, smart, not nice guy who I guess learns how to be sort of nice and less selfish. And all of these movies feel like that. They have that same kind of fast-talking comic sensibility. And so I like that he gets it in the end. And I like that Captain America becomes old and gets the dance with his lady friend. It's nice. I mean, it's so stupid, but I liked it. They focused mainly on the main Avengers, the Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye. I wish Black Panther had been it more because I like him.
Did not get much of a look in.
No, that was annoying. You know he's coming back because the movie made $1 billion and he's not gone forever. Spider-Man, I was hoping to see a little bit more of him. I like that kid.
Captain Marvel.
This should have been her movie because she's the most powerful person there.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, they've sort of did a nod to the fact she's, you know, this particular battle here with, what's his face?
Thanos.
Thank you.
That's kind of sets the tone for the conversation.
There is that happening all around the universe, so she's putting out fires all over the place. Yeah, it was, she showed up and then she went away, got a haircut, came back. You know, clearly it's not her fight, and it would have been unfair if
I guess,
the Avengers
yes,
in their final film
that's true.
Relied
yeah,
on Captain Marvel to fight their fight.
The Russo brothers are comfortable with Deus Ex Machina as far as she's concerned, up to a point. They can't have her at the end be the one that finally destroys Thanos, but she was doing a lot of saving people's butts Lincoln. At the beginning.
Mm.
How does she find Iron Man and what's her face in that spaceship at the beginning? How does she know that they were there? She's just happened to be passing through.
Yes.
She got some moments. Like, I really liked the moment where she's fighting with Thanos and he tries to headbutt her and it just comes off because she's so powerful. That was kind of fun. I like that. I didn't like how they managed to get all the female superheroes together in some kind of silly, contrived girl power moment. Marvel's not good at that.
Marvel is not good at that.
Because Captain Marvel had a bunch of that
spectacularly.
Stuff. Yeah,
that
not
moment.
Good.
Yeah, I as well. It was drawing attention to it. The neon sign saying
yeah,
"Here's
don't
the
draw
lady
attention
bit."
To it.
Yeah, just have them.
Yeah, just
do a great
yes,
fight.
Absolutely. And I read an interview with the writers, and they were talking about we wrestled with this moment because is it fun or is it pandering? We decided. Let the audience decide.
Well, I think they decided in doing it that way. And then it lasts 3 seconds and it fails.
It definitely feels like pandering.
But in the fight, like they have no impact whatsoever on the outcome of the fight.
I mean, I don't think that they necessarily intended it this way. But the main heroes are the dudes. And so this is kind of throwing the ladies a bone, but we're going to go back to all the dudes fighting 2 seconds later. And it just felt like...
Well, I think also though the fact that we are aware of Captain Marvel's absence.
Yeah.
Yeah, like she could have come in and...
She could have cleaned house.
Absolutely.
As far as I can tell, as far as I understand her powers. Mm. I thought Infinity War had better moments, better of those kinds of moments. Like they had the ladies from Black Panther doing things, and so that was more fun.
What did you think of the time travel to reverse all of the massacres of the end of Infinity War?
I dislike time travel in movies because I'm not going to sit there and think about all the 500 different ways this is scientifically or even logistically impossible. And, well, if you're going back in time and you kill somebody, doesn't that change the present? And I hate thinking about that stuff. I don't want to.
They did have a line that nodded to that, though.
Yes. Mm. And they had a few lines about Back to the Future.
Mm.
So they joked about it, and I decided just to go with it.
Well, you have to.
Because I didn't want to think too much about that. But time travel... Why do they have to rig all of that stuff up? So Iron Man figures out time travel overnight.
Yeah.
It's just that easy. But there's the time stone, and you can just turn back time with that time stone. Oh, but he destroyed it. Never mind. Anyway.
I'll wait.
I mean, it's not my favorite device, except in Back to the Future. But I went with it. Did you hate it?
No, I didn't hate it. I mean, how else are you going to fix this? I mean, when you do have... Time travel has been a part of one of the storylines, like the Doctor Strange.
Yes.
Doctor Strange, yes.
Yeah.
It's not out of the wheelhouse you're in to think that this might come into play.
I assumed that they were going to be turning back time.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't anticipate that this was how they were going to do it. And it led to some fun moments where they go back and Iron Man talks to his father, and that was kind of touching. Maybe my favorite moment of the movie is Thor talking to Rene Russo,
right,
who convinces him to... Stop being such a baby and get back into the fight.
Mm.
That was very nice. I was more touched by that than the other stuff.
Sure.
Because in the present, she has died, apparently, I think, in one of the movies.
Yes.
Did you think that Thor was fat shamed?
Well, look at what his slovenliness.
It was played for jokes.
Absolutely. He was a big Lebowski.
Yes.
Yeah.
I barely noticed it when it was happening.
Mm. Well, it's a joke in that you know Chris Hemsworth has abs for days.
Right. You can do your laundry on those things.
You mentioned that moment where Iron Man, at the start of the film, is sending messages back home. He's clearly wasting away before our eyes, sending messages to Ms. Pepper Potts through his helmet. And the android Nebula puts him in the pilot seat of their spaceship. And then he closes his eyes. I like to think that he passed on there. And the rest of the film is the hallucinations of a dying man. I don't know. But that's how I'm going to read it.
I think that's a good take. And so he dies in those hallucinations?
Yeah, because he dies anyway.
Yeah, I think that is as good an explanation for all the crazy stuff that happens as any.
I've only seen it once. Don't know if it actually holds water. Just a bit of fun seeing how we can have a bit more of a theory about this.
I will say that as soon as I saw it, I wanted to see it again.
Okay, wow.
And that is that doesn't happen all the time.
Didn't happen to me.
But it happens to me a lot with superhero movies.
Okay.
So.
Sorry, my voice went up then. Okay.
Avengers Endgame.
Is on every half hour cinema everywhere.
You can't miss it. If this is your thing.
Even if it's not, it's fine.
Yeah.
And see if my theory holds water.
And I think the 3 hours passes relatively easily. I don't think it.
Yes, very much. No, some 90-minute movies feel much longer. No, okay. I think they did a good job.
Yeah, all right.
You don't have to sit through the credits, but also acknowledge the people who made it.
Yes, it's nice. So next up, we've got the Australian romantic comedy Top End Wedding.
I've got to ask you something. Marry me?
Yes.
We're just meant to drop everything and fly to Darwin.
It's important to Lauren.
I always imagined getting married back home in Darwin. What are we talking? Are we talking tribal dance, didgeridoos, face paint?
Mum.
Dad?
Hello. What's that thing?
Say hello to your grandfather.
Grandpa? Grumpy? Gramps?
So I want to say that I think Miranda Tapsell was very charismatic. And she's got a presence.
Yeah.
And if this movie is successful, it's because of her delightfulness.
Did you recognize one Brian May from Bohemian Rhapsody, Willem Lee?
No, and I remember hearing that he was in Bohemian Rhapsody.
As her fiancé.
Yeah, yeah, I was staring at him the whole time and I couldn't figure out where I had seen him before.
Right, okay. The wig.
So speaking of delightfulness, you got a chance to speak to both Miranda Tapsell and Willem Lee, who plays Ned, her fiancé.
Here they are.
Well, thank you both for having a chat. Miranda, obvious place to start. The film, very clearly a love rom-com is coming through. Can we talk about your passion for the genre and to the extent that you wanted to make one yourself? What drove you there?
Oh, thank you. I love rom-coms because the best ones are really good written ones. I know that there's duds, but there is in every genre. I love them because I feel like they sort of gave me permission to dream and have desires and have ambitions. And I loved that the women in a lot of those rom-coms were unapologetic about that. And I think when Josh Tyler came to me, my co-writer, and I found out he had as much love of rom-coms as much as I did, I was really like, I was blown away. I was like, oh, wow, I found a friend. Especially when he told me he'd been up to the Northern Territory and I was like, no way, I haven't met anyone who's been up to my hometown, you know. So it was really, really great when he said, I think we should set one up in the Northern Territory. I think we should set a rom-com up in the Northern Territory. I thought to myself, oh, wow, like this is daunting, but I feel like I should do it.
yeah, for sure. And can we talk about also the way the genre opens up to family and to bring in the representation that we don't see in a lot of rom-coms anyway, and we don't make many here anyway.
Yeah, they're not treated with a lot of weight, but I think that they can be sort of like a velvet glove. They can speak to something deeper, and like we've seen that in a lot of rom-coms recently, like Crazy Rich Asians and the incredible Jessica James on Netflix and The Big Sick as well. So I think I felt really comforted by the fact that I was writing the film in this kind of climate, and I could trust that my gaze could be valid within that genre. And I was so glad that Josh sort of backed me in that too, that as long as everything paid off, it would be something that would sing.
Yeah. And the chemistry obviously in a rom-com needs to work. How did you two work together, find each other in the first place, and then work out that this might work on screen?
I read the script back in 2017 and immediately engaged with it, and then was lucky enough that Miranda happened to be on holiday in London at around about the same time. So she very generously gave up morning of her holiday to meet me in London and with the casting director. And we just kind of sparked pretty quickly and were going off script quite a lot
from
the beginning. And like making each other laugh and enjoying each other's company. And so that was the starting point. And then I kind of was talking to you about how the project evolved and, you know, recognising, as we've just spoken about now, that you've taken a genre that you love and you've kind of made this story, like told your really personal story, which I was really kind of inspired by and, just wanted to be a part of telling that story as well.
And I think I understand why writers love seeing actors say their words. I've never really understood that twinkle in their eye that they get when I've seen playwrights do the same thing. But I remember reading for Gwilym during this chemistry test, and I remember breaking out of character because I was like, whoa, this is all coming to life. This is amazing. It felt magical, and it was so great that, like, the banter felt very easy because that's what I really wanted Lauren and Ned to have. I wanted to make sure that when people watch this that it was completely undeniable that they're meant to be together, and that's because that's at the heart of every rom-com, and you need people, you need the audience to invest in that relationship.
Yeah, for sure. And have you ever acted with or had the writer so close on set before? And is she a stickler for every word of the script?
Miranda's very good at like being the playing the role that she's supposed to play at the appropriate time. So when you're on set as an actor, you're only ever an actor, and kind of left her writing hat to the side. Yeah. It's quite a feat, considering how many responsibilities you had on this film.
Yeah, for sure. Is it something you want to do again? Are you looking to write some more?
Oh, absolutely, because I know the kind of stories that I want to tell. I'm obsessed with Nora Ephron, and I love what she wrote. I also think that I've had such a conversation about diversity that I think, well, maybe it's, and this is my only trade, so I think, okay, well, this is how I'm going to stay in the industry, and this is the kind of stories that I want to tell.
Yeah, for sure. And the setting, of course, it's called Top End Wedding, but it's not just a setting, it's so much part of the story. Can we talk about the locations you used and what the meaning of them, and to really try and bring that to life within the scenes?
Yeah. So I'd grown up right across the territory. I was born in Darwin. I was raised in Kakadu, and I have family over in the Tiwi Islands. I had been to Katherine many times. Everyone is so people forget that even though everything's spread out, everyone knows everyone in the territory. And I really wanted to make sure that that wasn't lost in the story. And so I loved being able to put that into the writing. I was so lucky too that all the traditional owners, the Mirai, the Jawin, the Tiwi, the Larrakia, and the Kaurna down in Adelaide were all a part of this, because the story is about them, it's celebrating them. And so it just made sense that they had a seat at the table, that they were part of the conversation, and it was because of them that the story is so grounded in the territory.
Yeah. And the scenes in Tiwi particularly, and with the community involved, can we talk about how involved they were and just the roles they played?
Yeah. Well, we were really lucky that our production manager, Libby Collins, was a Tiwi woman herself. I had not grown up on the island, and so I wanted to make sure that someone who had grown up with that community was there, and making sure that we were telling the right story. So she was really, really great in making sure that everyone was across what we were doing, and that we had all the best intentions. And also, like, it was just so touching to see how invested they were in the film. We had the women in the choir, the Wangatunga Strong Women, write a song for Lauren and welcoming her home. And when they first played it for us, I mean, I couldn't look at Gwilym, because we were just all there together going, oh, my goodness, these women have just given us this gift. And I'm so honoured and touched by that. It was really actually lovely that Gwilym found parallels in his own culture as well. What did you say to me? It was almost like you said, I grew up in Birmingham, but my parents are from Wales, and that when I hear my Welsh countrymen sing, they sing from the heart, just like those old ladies did. It just always stayed with me, that story when Gwilym told me that, and I just thought, oh wow, I'm so glad that this speaks to so many people, and I'm so glad that when you read it that it spoke so much to you.
It did, and I think, that was my connection with that experience, and I think that everyone around the world will have different kind of associations with that feeling of belonging and of home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're very moving scenes, like that towards the end there, especially when they start with the singing. It's beautiful. Yeah, well, thank you. I think we're sadly out of time, but
that's
really appreciate
right.
it. Yeah, congratulations.
No, thanks very
thank
much.
You. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So that was Miranda Tapsell and Gwilym Lee.
So that's interesting how Crazy Rich Asians and The Big Sick were brought up in terms of representation, specifically in romantic comedies. Mm. This movie certainly goes a long way for that. There's a lot of people you see on screen that you don't normally get to see. There's a big segment of the population that get to see themselves on screen. That certainly means quite a bit.
Absolutely. And also in Australia, we don't make a lot of romantic comedies. Racking my brains here. Yeah, not really. And certainly not ones with greater representation. Like I could, we've made some with, hipsters in Newtown and whatever, but it's, I think this is different and it's made for a broad audience. Like it is a broad.
Broadest of the broad.
It's a nice, sweet film. And I don't mean that as a diss, but it is.
It definitely is.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Oh, I was.
I don't mean that as a diss, but it is.
Yeah, I'm saying it is a diss.
Maybe. It's hard to hate on. Like it's.
Yes.
It's lovely. I thought it was maybe a little overlong.
I didn't think it was good,
okay.
But I don't want to hate on it because it tries some new things. And I want to be charitable about it, but I didn't laugh and I felt absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. But I liked seeing, but the representation thing, it's very nice. I mean, it's the same issue I had with Crazy Rich Asians. I thought that movie stank, but it's great to see a movie, a real broad mainstream movie with mostly all Asian cast. It's great. Mm. I want to be fair, but I also want to hold all movies to the same standards. Mm. Not that my standards or our standards mean anything necessarily to anybody, but if we relax on some things, then, you know, it just feels like we're just giving things a pass for the sake of it because they're giving it a good shot. And that doesn't do anybody any favors. But, you know, there are some reasons to see this movie that are new that you don't see in other places.
Yeah. What helped it for me was I saw it at the premiere where a lot of the cast and crew were there and whooping when they were seeing themselves on screen and having a wild old time. So that was, you know, obviously they're not going to be at every screening that I know of. but no, that sort of added to the heightened experience of watching it. So there you have it. Top End Wedding in cinemas now.
So now we turn to what we've been watching. And this week, as a happy coincidence, we've both...
Happy!
Well, less than happy. We've been watching the same thing, which is Chris Lilley's new show, Lunatics.
On Netflix.
So this is very typical of one of Chris Lilley's ensemble shows where he plays several different characters, as opposed to Jonah from Tonga or... Jemai, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Chris Lilley of We Could Be Heroes fame.
Summer High Tide.
Summer High Tide.
In that vein where he's playing several different characters, all of whom have...
character quirks.
Yes. It seems very much like he is punching way down on these poor people. I watched the first episode and then I skipped, fast-forwarded through and watched the end of the series.
Did you? Okay.
Because
I didn't.
I was I was feeling very much like, does he hate these people? What is going on? Why has he given them all weirdly obvious things that we're meant to be laughing at and not with in any way? Why does he make these people like this so that we're supposed to laugh at them? Like the clothes section department store manager who's clearly has no idea what he's doing with fashion, but he thinks of himself as a big time fashion guy.
With a sexual fixation for objects.
Yeah, that's meant to be super funny.
Meant to be hilarious.
An extremely tall girl in college. Like she's freakishly tall and that's supposed to be funny. A fat kid Instagram star. That's supposed to be, or he's not really a star. I guess he's a loser. These are all losers.
He's called Lunatics. This is not out of character for Chris Lilley.
But it has he always been so uncharitable with his characters? I mean, you're supposed to love these people in some way.
I don't know about that.
At the end of the show, there's a lot of voiceover about just be yourself. Mm. And it's a very positive form of message. But that's not what I got from the show at all.
I barely lasted the first episode. There was a lot of press about it in Australia when the preview dropped. And when you're watching Netflix, other things, I could not escape. It got very heavy rotation on the front carousel of Netflix. It was really trying to feed me Lunatics.
Maybe there's something about your habits that make the algorithm think.
No, but did you not?
No, yeah, it's always up there.
In the featured part. Yeah, not related to what I've been watching. Well, no, now it will. Great. You know, Chris Lilley comes with a bit of baggage. He's not immune to doing some blackface in his day.
Yellowface.
Correct. So...
He's become very controversial now, but when he first started, I think he was very universally loved and people think of him as a genius.
Yeah, We Could Be Heroes about the contenders for Australian of the Year and whatnot was... quite lauded.
When you criticize his stuff now, it's extremely divisive. There's lots of people who say this shtick is really old, and it certainly feels very old. And it felt really old to me at the beginning.
Yeah.
But
this is not funny.
But people love it. People love him.
Well, I'd like to talk to them.
Me too. I was thinking the same thing. Mm. What would that conversation go like, do you think?
Well, I would like to see what they're saying that I'm not. Like, comedy is subjective, I get that. But it's subjective and then it's non-existent. And what about the setup of these characters is an innately funny premise that people I think it's hilarious. The fact that there's a writing credit, because to me it all seemed improvised, and there's one of a former porn star who's showing you
gosh,
her collection.
That is so depressing.
It's boring and unfunny and it's dumb. It's not even that set up. Just, I don't know what the point is.
How is it funny to make fun of a woman who had to do porn and is now living in a shack and clearly mentally
has been damaged
disturbed.
By the experience.
Yes, that's not funny.
Yeah.
When I was picturing the people that like this stuff, I'm picturing maybe a 14-year-old boy. Is that possible? Young teenager? Did you find this stuff funny when it was first coming out? You would have been young.
Young.
Not that you're not young now,
yeah,
but you would.
I'm still young.
I mean, that feels like the target audience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I watched it and sort of the...
Because I bet there's a segment of the population that loved it at the beginning mm-hmm. and then watching it now would think, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, what happened?
Because this was one of the first shows I saw in this country. Mm. No, I wasn't in the country yet. I was on the plane moving to Australia and I watched, let me find out about the TV here. Mm. And I watched Summer High Tie and Kath and Kim.
Yeah, I was going to say they're very much linked, I think, in that time.
And especially
without,
this.
I think Kath and Kim's better, I should just say.
Well, it at least didn't make me think it was so hack and derivative. Yeah. I mean, it felt immediately old, and like Christopher Guest stuff is just
right?
on a different planet. And he'd already been doing it for years. Mm. So I didn't understand, why is this so? But someone once said, you got to be Australian to get it. The real estate agent with the big butt, who's going to find that funny? Some adolescent. Know.
Someone
Boy,
who's
I guess.
Greenlit this for a show. I
also have to say, we have to mention that it came with some controversy, right? Because one of the characters is a South African pet psychic who's extremely tan and has very tight curls.
Correct.
And people thought she was black and that he was
doing
back
blackface
at it.
Again. Yeah.
But
yeah.
She's white.
Correct. It's a fine line.
It is a...
Yeah, look, it is.
It was uncomfortable to watch.
Well, you scrutinize. You certainly scrutinize when she comes on screen.
What about the teenager that he plays who is screaming horrific things at the teenage girl next door where she's 11 or 12 and he's talking about her privates and...
Yeah.
And he's
hypersexualized. Like, it's meant to shock.
He's a 50-something-year-old man dressed up as a kid shouting that at a... It's uncomfortable.
I've wasted so much time watching it. I feel loath to talk even more about this show. It's just, I don't know what the point is. It's desperately unfunny.
Really unfunny. And I don't want to be, I guess it's important to me not to, because, you know, people like Chris Lilly, I would imagine, think, everybody's got their opinions now and everybody's too politically correct.
Right. Outrage culture, all of that.
Yes. And
No.
You can't let people be funny anymore. And I
would love it to be funny.
I would love for this to be funny and to be proved wrong and to be surprised. What a story that would be.
Who's the joke on? Like, what's the premise? How is this cutting? It might make you feel uncomfortable. I'm all for uncomfortable comedy that then
absolutely.
Makes you question, why am I laughing at that? That is not in any way the case here.
And I think even before you get caught up in all of his blackface stuff, just as a comedy, this feels very old and
underbaked.
And shticky.
Yep. Nope.
There is, I think people think of him as supremely talented because he's playing so many different characters. And even though I think fundamentally it doesn't work, he is clearly, you said that he seemed improvised. I felt like he's put in a lot of work.
In the specifics of the characters and sort of their look and the way they speak and their intonations and whatnot, sure. But the actual scenes and the plot is non-existent. It's like the joke is all in the makeup and the characterization. It's not in...
It's watch this loser try to get through life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's depressing. So that's Lunatics. That's on Netflix if you want to watch it.
We don't have it.
So that's it for our show. Make sure you are subscribed to SBS The Playlist. Make sure you give us a review. It helps people find the show. If you want to get in touch, we're at SBS Movies on Facebook and Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Nick Bassine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next week.
Thanks for listening.